It's the Troopany Show with your host, James Troopany.
Hello and welcome to the Troopany Show. My name is James Troopany. This is my show, and joining me today is Mr. Alex Watt to celebrate the 46th anniversary of New Japan Pro Wrestling, our favourite men's wrestling promotion in Japan. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, yeah, celebrating the fact it's not snowing anymore as well. We've just been discussing how Britain was in chaos from the 3 days of snow we had.
Yes, a light dusting, I believe, is the phrase. Yeah.
And yes, the whole country was shut down for several days. We powered through.
To be honest with you, like, it was getting to the end of my street. I couldn't get to the end of my street. Once I was past that point, things were dandy. But actually getting out of my front gate, that was the tricky part. Because, you know, I could have dig it out, but who's got the time to do that? But anyway.
Well, quite, yes.
So then, we will open this particular show. Well, first of all, let's have a look at where we are. We're in Ottawa Gymnasium in Tokyo, Japan. It was attendance of 3,864, which is not bad for one of these shows. It's kind of the usual thing. With a 46th anniversary show, it tends to go a bit out of sync with everything else. They try and do something a bit different that celebrates the joys of New Japan Pro Wrestling. And this year was kind of a return to tradition. What was your thoughts going into this show, Alex? Where did you see it in the New Japan canon, as it were?
Yeah, it's always... Like, last year was Okada and Ibushi wrestling as Tiger Mask W, right? Was the main event. If I recall correctly off the top of my head.
Is that Kota Ibushi? Yes. Sorry.
Sorry, and the mystery man.
There we go.
Tiger Mask W. Sorry, breaking kayfabe there within the first few minutes.
How dare you?
I know, disgraceful. But yeah, so they tend to, particularly with the title match, do something a bit outside the box, which obviously they did with Okada and Ospreay this time. But the rest of the card wasn't hugely different from maybe what you would expect this year.
Yeah.
It was kind of stuff you would probably see generally, I think. You know, the IC title match, that's something they could put together on another show. So, throughout the card, really. I think going in, the main appeal was the two title matches, well, the three title matches, including the tag titles. It felt very much like just a regular New Japan show with that kind of added twist in the main event, which is no bad thing.
Indeed, yes, very much so. So we'll start with the first match, which was a 10-man tag team match, which featured Hiroshi Tenzan coming back from injury, Jushin Thunder Liger, Kushida, Reisuke Taguchi, and Tiger Mask. They defeated Ren Narita, Shota Imano, that's Red Shoes Imano's son, Tetsuro Kiyagi, Tomoyaki Oka, that's the big un, not the other big un, but that big un, and Yuji Nagata in 7 minutes and 31 seconds, a fun and entertaining 7 minutes and 31 seconds of fun. It wasn't really any more than that. Young boys match, some of the new ones were coming up, like Ren Narita we haven't seen too much of before, and Yagi we haven't seen too much before, but Shota Imano is on his way. Tomoyaki Oka seems to have lost a lot of weight. He seems to have stripped down. That baby fat he had in the summer's gone. He's a lot leaner than he used to be. I think this is really interesting. I was reading some tweets from Pollyanna, the wrestler from the UK, the female wrestler, and she was talking about her time in Japan when she went and trained with Emi Sakura, and she described it as she lost 10 pounds and gained so much knowledge, and that's why it was so worthwhile. That's what the dojo experience is about. You know, it is about getting in shape. Or as B. Priestley told me, I want to go to World Wandering Stardom because they'll kill me, but I'll look amazing.
that is the Japan dojo system summed up, really, isn't it?
They'll kill me, but I'll look amazing. Yeah, so, yeah, it was interesting to see how these young boys have developed. Certainly Oku, we've probably known more about him than any of the others. And he's, so what did you think of these guys, Alex, in this particular matchup?
Yeah, it's good. Sorry, apologies for my voice, by the way. I've got a bit of a cold, so if I... keep coughing that's why. This was, like you say, it was fun. It was the young lions coming in. They show lots of fire but not enough to put away the veterans. It was very much like when a dad takes his kids to take on all the local old blokes. with Nagata. I mean, Liger and Tiger Mask were their grumpiest old man status here, which was a lot of fun. But yeah, like you say, pretty much did what it said in the tin. There's always the Young Lions only have like five moves, so it's sort of how they can use them in creative ways. There was a spot where they had like multiple Boston Crabs on and stuff like that. It was interesting as well. What I was listening to the English commentary, and they were like, it's pretty easy for the veterans to scout them, given that they have so few moves that they, you know, it's kind of putting them at even more of a disadvantage if you think about it. But there was a nice tease on the finish with Umino nearly countering Kushida's armbar into a pin. But
yeah.
I like that they threw that in at the end, and then obviously just rolled out of it, and he had to tap out. But yeah, it's basically what you want from these. Of the Young Lions get to show a bit of what they're about, but ultimately come up short, basically.
Indeed, yeah, it was good, and certainly it was nice to see Yuji Nagata back in the New Japan ring. We saw him a little bit last month, but he's back with the program for a little while whilst he's off working in All Japan, so it's nice to see him. It was just a good all-round fun match, really. All right, the next match was a six-man tag featuring Chaos, Hiroki Goto, Tomohiro Ishii, and Taro Yano as they defeated Dave Finley, Juice Robinson, and Toa Henare in 7 minutes and 41 seconds. Speaking of unrequited love stories in New Japan, Tomohiro Ishii and Toa Henare have had a love of violence between the two of them for the last 2 months, as Henare tries to go after the big dog, which is probably not the most advisable path to take, but there you go, he's young.
He's not doing too bad, though.
No, he's doing
knocking
all right.
Him down and stuff.
Yeah.
But are you saying this is like the next Ibushi Omega storyline? That would be amazing.
I think so, but it's more of a brotherhood of pain rather than an actual genuine love story. So yeah, but it was 7 minutes and 41 seconds. It was fun. It was all right. It did what it said on the tin. It's kind of odd, this one, because everyone seems to be in limbo in this match. It's like, clearly Goto has got something to do. He's never open weight champion. There'll be a challenge of him next month. But Ishii and Yano are clearly building up to a tag team championship run against the current champions. So you can clearly see Ishii and Yano have got something to go there. And Dave Finley and Juice Robinson have had this mini run with Jay White, but they haven't really got anywhere to go. And Toa Henare has got nowhere to go at the moment either. So it is kind of like they're losing because there's nothing for them to do. And they're also losing because they're the junior members of this particular match. So it's just kind of there. And it wasn't bad for what it was, but I need to see something develop for these three. I know they're sorted, but I want something for them.
Yeah, that's fair. I think this happens quite a bit in New Japan, doesn't it? Where there obviously is plans for these guys down the line, but right now they have nothing to do, so it's sort of filling time until that stuff comes up, which is we'll chat a bit more about that later with some of the other guys, where they're sort of just killing time until they get to like the summer, it feels like, which is probably the case with a few of these. But yeah, I mean, like you said, it was a fun match for what it was. Everyone got a moment to shine. It's pretty much what we've come to expect from these multi-man tags in New Japan when they're on the undercard. Like you touched on, the dynamic between Henare and Ishii, don't know why I pronounced that weird, is great. And I think that's obviously another plan there. They're going to have a singles match at some point, and it's probably going to be great. They beat the crap out of each other, and that was kind of the highlight. And then the only other point I had was Juice Robinson. It feels like he saw everyone mocking Okada's disco pants and was like, hold my beer. Like, because his pants, for anyone who hasn't seen it, looks like Christmas sort of threw up on parachute pants. I'm not really sure what he's going for there.
Imagine if a 7-year-old girl had dressed Brutus the Barber Beefcake, and you get halfway
That's spot on
to seeing how gloriously awful Juice Robinson's outfit currently is.
Yes, I'm not sure what he's going for there, but fair play to him, you know. We should say as well, Kitamura was due to wrestle on this card around this point, but got injured before that final challenge match against Nakanishi.
Yeah, he was supposed to be in the opening match, and Nakanishi was going to be his final test.
Mm.
Which, if you can drag a decent match out of Nakanishi, then that is a really good test.
Yeah. I feel like that one, that's the kind of match that Nakanishi would shine in, though, right? It's just another big bloke, and they can just slap each other around.
I mean, I'm hard on Nakanishi just because he has not evolved one iota in the last 25 years. If you go back to when he won the G1 in what, 1998, 99, he was doing the same thing then. He hasn't evolved. There is no journey. There is no story. He's a big lad who does big lad things, and that's it. And you know, I think sometimes it's just, that's not enough for me. I need more.
Yeah, no, I do agree with you. Particularly when, you know, you see in the match we've just said about Ishii and Henare, and there is actually personality behind that. They're not just, you know,
yeah,
as much as they are just two lads beating each other up, there's more to it than that. You know, there's more behind it.
Yeah, yeah, it's just, with Nakanishi, it's just like, big lad, short hair. He used to be big lad, collar length hair, now he's just big lad short hair, and that's all there is to him, you know. And it's like, I don't see the appeal. I just don't get it. That's just me.
That's fair.
Okay then.
But I think that match will be all right though, anyway, whenever it finally happens.
Yeah, it will give him something. It's not like he's going to stand there like the Rock of Gibraltar, is it? So
the Jock of Gibraltar.
All right then, we'll move on to the next match, which was an IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Title 3-Way match, and there was a title change as Suzuki-Gun, El Desperado, and Yoshinobu Kanemura defeated Roppongi 3K, Sho and Yo, and Los Agradables de Japón, Bushi and Hiromu Takahashi in 16 minutes and 34 seconds of a thoroughly entertaining matchup. Now, I did kind of predict that this would happen last month, so I'm quite pleased with myself. I'm just not very happy.
Did you really?
Yeah,
I thought this completely blindsided me, but God.
I did say that, you know, it's likely that they're going to have a go at the championships if they won, and they did win them last year, so it was strongly implied that Suzuki-Gun would win them again because it's their turn. They win the Junior Tag Team Championships in spring, so because they have to get beat up before the summer in the Tag Team Tournament in winter, so that makes sense. It gives them Sho and Yo something to chase for. And this was thoroughly entertaining, but was it me, or did Hiromu and Bushi just seem out of sorts in this match?
Yeah, a little bit, actually. They didn't... I mean, Bushi, I don't really remember him doing much. I think that's the thing, like, Hiromu ran through a bunch of his usual spots. So yeah, Bushi didn't seem to be that involved. I don't know if he was carrying an injury or something. Yeah, I mean, I hadn't actually thought about it until you've just said it, and yeah, they didn't.
They seem to be like... I know that could be the story of the match, because Suzuki-Gun's story is they stop everybody's momentum, that's why they're so good.
Yeah.
I understand that.
Obviously the story they were telling, yeah.
Yeah, but it just seems to me like, you know, like, Sho and Yo got all their double team manoeuvres in, they looked really, really good, and Hiromu and Bushi, they didn't look bad, but they didn't look as good as they normally do. Like, we normally sell, say, LIJ as a unit are the crispest, smoothest working tag team unit in wrestling, and they just weren't in this particular instance.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that was them setting something up or playing into some kind of tension or anything like that, or if it was just them having an off night. Like I say, but maybe that Bushi was carrying an injury or something, because he seemed to be not that involved in a lot of the stuff. But yeah.
The thing is, I've not been following Christy from Wrestling Sexism's Twitter feed this week because I'm trying to avoid spoilers for the New Japan Cup. But she must have been quite excited to have Sho and Yo, Despy, and Bushi and Hiromu in the same match.
Yeah, and the Despy one as well.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure how she feels about Kanemaru. I'm sure she'll tell us after she's listened to this, but... Yeah, it must have been very interesting. I'm going to go back. Once the New Japan Cup's finished, I will go back over Christie's tweets and figure out what she
work
said.
Your way back through to see what the reactions were.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the match itself, I was surprised that they changed the titles a little bit, actually. It was probably the only genuine shock of the night, because as we'll probably want to discuss, there was a lot of sort of foregone conclusions in the night that kind of just went exactly as you would expect them to. Whereas this, I kind of would have leaned towards one of the other two teams winning, as much as I do enjoy Desperado and Kanemaru together. I mean, the way they did the ending was really creative. The whole match layout, in fact, like we said, with basically Suzuki Gun were just being sneaky assholes essentially for the whole thing, and cutting, like you say, cutting off everyone's momentum, and then it just kind of made them look like the smartest guys in the room with the ending. You know, they gave Bushi a taste of his own medicine. They capitalized on basically one team being eliminated. They, you know, the whiskey spray and the low blow. And yeah, it should make for like an interesting dynamic going forward. If they stick with the titles, because they do have a habit, and they've done it again here, of bouncing those junior tag titles around, which is kind of the knock on that division, that no one ever seems to hold the titles for an extended period of time, is a shame, really.
I say that, but also Yo and Sho are young champions, you know. That, to me, that makes sense.
So logically, I see what you mean. It probably makes a bit more sense there. Yeah. Should say as well, Yo and Sho look better every time
they get in there.
Like, they look so polished now, which for guys that young is really impressive. I guess the plan is they're going to head into sort of spring and summer with doing matches between sort of combos of these three teams. And if that's the case, I am very much all for it, because I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
So long as we don't get three ways or some along like we did with KES and Road
War. Please don't do that again.
Gorillas of Destiny. Yeah.
Two on two, please. Mix it up. Definitely.
KES, Gorillas of Destiny, and Gorillas of Destiny.
It was War Machine.
There you go. They're all great tag teams, but like, you can have too much of a good thing, and doing it five times when one summer was just far too much. It was about three too many, to be honest.
We said at the time they could have easily just mixed it up and had one team against one team, you know.
Yeah.
And just do different combinations, and then it doesn't feel as stale then. So no. I would hope that's what they do here.
They were basically telegraphing the fact they only had three tag teams. You know,
which again would be the issue here, depending on, you know, with the books, they're in and out now. Ring of Honor's their priority, really. So
they're heavyweights now.
They're going up to heavyweight as well. Yeah, sorry. there you go. That's a team gone, though, isn't it?
If
these are the only three, that's going to present an issue.
Yeah. Okay, then. Well, congratulations to Suzuki Gun for that particular win, and we'll move on to the next match, which was a singles match between Sanada and Yoshihashi. 17 minutes and 38 seconds. This was pretty good. I really enjoyed this. Again, as you said, a bit of a foregone conclusion that Sanada was going to win this. And I really don't think it should have been. I think Yoshihashi might have done better if he'd won this, because it would have given him some more viability going into New Japan Cup season and up for the G1. You know, he's just come off this loss to Naito, which, yeah, fine, you have to do that. But I'm not so sure this would have been so good. It would tell the story of Sanada having to build himself back up again as well. But what do you think, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, on that note as well, like, why is Yoshihashi become like the guy who failed title challengers face at the next show? This seems to be a running theme now, because Naito did it as well. It's like, he's the guy who has to take the fall for them to get their heat back a little bit. They probably could have done a bit more with this. Like, it was a decent match. I think they've had better. I think if you shave 5 minutes off this, they probably would have had a slightly better match, as it felt a bit slow in the middle. You know, a few less minutes and they could have worked that faster pace, because like the final few minutes were really good, obviously, with these two. Yoshi worked that babyface role really well, so like you say, it might have worked better if he could have got the win, sets him up for the New Japan Cup, which again seemed to be, there are a few matches here where they had to build guys up to a certain level ahead of the New Japan Cup, like the match we're going to talk about in a second. And yeah, they maybe could have done that a bit better, but it was good for what it was. Yoshihashi's looking good again, which probably sets us up to predict he'll have a good G1 again, only to be proved completely wrong, which is now a running theme. And also, just on a side note, shout out to Don Callis for this one during Yoshihashi's entrance when they were talking about, I think Yoshihashi's facing Ibushi in the New Japan Cup, right, in the first round. So they were talking about that. He says, yeah, Kota's like a son to me. He always has been. just great. Yeah, I've always liked him.
Not so much.
Yeah, what's changed, Don?
All right, then. So, we move on.
Because I should say I didn't get a chance to jump on last week when you were talking about the Golden Lovers and how it is the best storyline in wrestling at the moment.
Go on, then. Have your moment. You should talk about this.
I didn't have anything. I don't have anything prepared right now.
Well, Marcus has talked about it. Chelsea's talked about it. Sai's talked about it. It's only you and Alex who haven't talked about it. So, we should give you all your opportunity to speak about it.
Oh, man. Basically, it just is the best storyline in wrestling at the moment. I'm hugely enjoying it, and I'm hugely enjoying how great Cody is looking in it as well. It should be said.
He is
the most sort of interesting I think he's been since leaving WWE in this feud, because it is genuinely like he is going crazy, like a really old school bad guy. He just can't accept that he's like in the wrong, and everyone just like the way Marty's reacting to him, it's like, you know, you're a married man, right? Like, why is this bothering you so much? I just think it's just been great at every turn. And I wonder as well, actually, while we're on it, if Ibushi's gonna win the New Japan Cup to sort of add some more stuff to it, because obviously there's a lot of stuff you can do with Ibushi and Okada, assuming that's who he challenges, and all the history between Omega and Okada, and all the kind of stuff they can play off there.
Should we talk about what happened at 16th anniversary Ring of Honor last night?
Go on. I don't know if I've seen this, actually.
Do you want to know?
You can spoil.
Okay, at the end of last night's show, which featured Cody, I can't remember if Cody was wrestling, but Bury the Bullet Club
Oh,
Bear,
I did see this, yes. Yeah,
he came down to ringside, and he takes the bear head off to discover it's Kenny Omega coming to confront Kenny, because they're going to meet... They're going to meet a Supercard of Honor. Now, Brandy kissed Kenny this time and then said, you liked it. And it's like... this is something Chelsea was talking about on the Shoulders Up account, and it's been a bit of a concentration, because me, Si, and Chelsea had a big conversation last week about consent, and there is nicer ways of doing this angle than they currently are doing it. As much as we love the angle between Kota and... Kenny, the stuff with Cody has been good, but this is kind of dragging things down a bit when it comes to consent in the age of where we talk about consent all the time and being responsible with consent. As Si said last week, at least it's the heel doing it, but this is still not, you know, we could be bigger than this. You know, it's great that we are finally getting a babyface gay storyline or bisexual storyline. That's really, really cool, but there's still things that they could fix that wrestling still shoots itself in the foot despite doing all the right things.
I know what you mean, but is there an argument that sort of it has everyone saying, you know, this is wrong the way they're acting, the heels? Is that maybe not the idea? Slightly, maybe I'm giving it too much credit, but like when Cody kissed Ibushi, right, or Cody kissed Omega, I can't remember, in the tag match, but on commentary they were very selling like that is against his consent, that is not okay. So maybe I'm giving them too much credit, but I wonder if that is the idea. And like you say, with Brandy doing it and you liked it, is very kind of like that horrible thing people do where, oh, you you're not gay, you just haven't like kissed enough women and stuff. Whether they're kind of playing off that idea a little bit. Maybe I'm giving it too much credit, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's the thing for me. I think this is where it becomes uncomfortable. I mean, there is no... The fact that this storyline exists, that for queer people and for bisexual people and for gay people, is a fantastic thing. Don't get me wrong.
It's certainly, unquestionably, the best way a storyline like this has been handled. And the fact that... there was that long thread on Twitter.
Yeah.
I forget Kenny retweeted it, but someone wrote out the whole history, and it's very much, you know, these two guys are in love basically, and that's never been, you know, hidden. It's not. It might not be explicitly said in a lot of ways, but everyone knows that is what this storyline is, and it's been handled very respectfully in that sense. So.
Yeah,
It's not being played for laughs. You know, it's a relationship between these two.
I think we need a bigger conversation about this. I think we're probably going to have to do an episode specifically about this and the history of LGBTQ rights in pro wrestling, because I think there's a couple of other stories we could talk about as well, because I think we should also talk about like negative stories, like Gorgeous George to an extent is kind of a negative representation of effeminate men. He wasn't gay, but there was obviously an inference there, and we have to talk about that because there's an awful lot of baggage in pro wrestling history that we need to talk about to square this up, and we will do an episode on it soon. I'll talk to the gang because I'm sure that Chelsea would want to talk about this, and probably Si as well, so we will get to it. We will have a big conversation about it, but let's get back to this show because we're kind of wandered off there.
We did. This is the thing, it's such a good storyline, so
it just takes us out the moment.
Well, like neither of these guys are on the card, and somehow we've ended up talking about
wrestling
Omega
for
Ibushi. That's how good they are.
Wrestling for another company on a card 4 days later that we can't talk about because we haven't seen the rest of the card. Okay then, right. Well, we'll move on then. So the next matchup was Tetsuya Naito defeating the debuting in the heavyweight division Tai Chi, as in go home.
Everyone's favorite wrestler, Tai Chi.
Well, there was like, I was listening to the crowd chanting, and the crowd, and Kelly goes, "Well, there's some people chanting, 'Let's go, Tai Chi,'" and I'm going, "No, they're not. They're chanting, 'Go home, Tai Chi,' in Japanese. Are you paying attention? How long have you worked there now?" the least popular man in New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I did point out, Kelly did, I mentioned, make a point that like Taka Michinoku and Tai Chi have been promoting shows under the New Japan banner for about the last 5 years because they wanted to put shows together that they wanted to see, which actually has been really, really cool. There are a bunch of other stuff with Tai Chi I'm not particularly happy with, but you know, yeah, he is a good heel. He's a terrible wrestler. I do not enjoy watching him wrestle.
Like, people hate him. I mean, is there not an argument he's doing the right thing? He is a heel. People are supposed to hate him. And the thing, like, the stuff like him singing to the ring and stuff is, you know, it's so annoying, and that's what it's meant to be.
Yeah, I suppose so. I just don't particularly enjoy his matches that much. That's just me. I mean, this was alright, but I was more interested in it because I like watching Naito wrestle than watching him wrestle, so I was intrigued as to how Naito was going to deal with him. Sending him packing in 14 minutes was about right, I think. He didn't kill him straight away, so that was good. And Naito was kind of like... Naito was another one. He was kind of like on and off night again. I don't know if it was like, "Oh, I just can't be bothered with this." And that was his character saying that, not himself saying that. And just like, "Oh, Tai Chi, Jesus. Do I have to?" But I'm not really sure. What did you think of this one, Alex?
I didn't think Naito was that off, really. I thought he turned in a pretty good performance. I mean...
Off is the wrong word. What I mean is... not as enthused as he normally is, but it's difficult to tell when he's enthusiastic anyway.
That's the thing, that is the character, so it is hard to tell what's real and what isn't, if you like. Yeah. But Tai Chi is... I mean, he was still a bit stiff and awkward here, but I felt like Naito did work hard to make him, Tai Chi, look like he belonged at heavyweight, and it did kind of look like Tai Chi belonged in there at points. Maybe you disagree with me.
But just looking at the physical size, because he's way bigger than Tetsuya Naito, and it's like, how the hell did you stay a junior for 10 years?
Yeah, well, they were making sort of a joke about that on commentary, weren't they? Yeah. Like, I think he's been over the weight limit for some time. And they were like, yeah, maybe they just took the measurements wrong or something, you know. Which is going to be the same with Ospreay as well, where he's clearly too big for that division now, but because of the way he wrestles and other issues. We'll talk about that in a second anyway. But I felt like the key here was making Tai Chi look like he belonged in the heavyweight division and setting him up so he looked like a threat to Tanahashi in the New Japan Cup. I think it did achieve that, and I think Naito did help to bring Tai Chi up a level. They did smart stuff, you know, with Tai Chi attacking him before the bell and power bombing him on the stage so he could take control early and it doesn't make Naito look silly, if you like. Because Tai Chi's got the upper hand by cheating. And you've obviously got the underlying story of Tai Chi trying to hurt Naito because Zack Sabre Jr. is facing Naito in the New Japan Cup, so you had that as an underlying storyline as well. I think Naito gave Tai Chi a lot in terms of like counters and things like that. Looking smart, but Tai Chi looked like he'd, you know, scouted a lot of Naito's stuff, which, you know, Naito doesn't have to give him that.
True.
I mean, like I say, you know, Tai Chi, he's still not great. I agree with you, but I felt like he looked a lot better. His offense looked a lot more brutal, I guess is the best way to put it. Like, there was a back suplex which looked horrendously nasty. Like, Naito looked like he nearly landed on his head. And like, Tai Chi was really laying in the strikes and stuff like that, which he's going to have to do if he's going to be a heavyweight. We know how hard they all hit at the top level in Japan. So, I was kind of impressed with Tai Chi, to be honest. I'm not, you know, I'm very much in the go-home camp usually, but I thought he rose to the occasion.
Fair enough.
Naito. Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, fair enough. I mean, just my personal taste. I think maybe it's because he's a heel character. I just don't like him as much, but it's 2 years since I've seen him in a singles match, and I wasn't that impressed with him then. So, you know, all he's done is work tag matches, so...
I think that's what I mean. I was more impressed with this singles outing than I was the last time I saw him. You know, if he ends up in the G1 or whatever, that's when we're probably going to see how good he is, if he can do it consistently. I mean, if he can't have a good match against Tanahashi, then there's probably no hope for him, to be honest. Everyone has good matches against Tanahashi. So I was going to say as well, I loved Naito using Tai Chi's own tricks against him at the end, which was very, very Naito, basically. And also him throwing the referee into Taka Michinoku to get rid of him, which was the most sort of LIJ way to stop interference from happening. And this sort of what we were talking about earlier with guys and what's the plan for them. What's the plan for Naito? Because that's starting to feel a bit like he's treading water at the moment of whether, you know, we're assuming he's going to probably win the G1 and face Okada again at the Dome. That's what we're assuming the plan is.
I wouldn't lock that in. I wouldn't lock that in. I would say it's either going to be Omega or it's going to be Naito.
Yes, I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
Again, you've got an even wider question. If he doesn't win the G1, really, what are the plans for him? Because he really does feel like he's treading water a little bit and almost enhancing guys. Obviously, here, definitely with Tai Chi was the case, and a little bit with guys like Yoshihashi as well. It's like trying to bring some guys up to his level. And you're kind of like, if Jericho isn't coming back in the summer, which is saying he isn't, but who knows with Jericho? He could be completely worthless. you genuinely have no idea with him now. So that was obviously the main thing we saw for him going forward. But yeah, if that doesn't happen, what do they have for him?
I think possibly the reason why he got the Tai Chi assignment this month is just, we've got to figure something out for you now. If Jericho is not coming, which is the plan going forward at the moment, we assume, then, you know, what are they going to do with him? Because he go back after the Intercontinental Championship? Because him and Suzuki's money.
Yes, and I would, that's what I would hope would happen if they don't have other plans. Yeah. Certainly if they need a big match for Dominion, that makes sense underneath a big title match.
But do they want to take the title off Suzuki? He's only just got it.
Well, they might not have to take it off him. If they're doing the, you know, Naito has to work his way back up kind of story, then maybe that plays into the wider storyline.
Yeah, yeah. Once I can beat Suzuki, I can beat so-and-so, so da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, which they do that stuff all the time, of course, but it just... I'm sure there's a plan. It's just it feels very, like, at this moment, like, what is that plan?
Well, I mean, yeah, but and also...
You can't see the sort of road leading to it, basically.
We've been doing this now for 4 years together, and how many times have we said this, and then... in 2 months' time, we're like, yep, you were right, they were right, don't worry about it, it's all okay.
Yeah, which I'm kind of hoping is the case, because that does happen all the time. It'll happen with a bunch of other guys as well, who were like, oh, they're just treading water now, and then they'll all be in big title matches in 2 months, and be like, oh, okay, it's fine. But yeah, it'd just be interesting to see where they go with Naito, basically. You don't want him to just be there, you know, he's too good for that.
All right then, so we move on to the IWGP Intercontinental title match, which was Minoru Suzuki defending against Togi Makabe, 19 minutes and 4 seconds. This was a fun matchup, I do have to say. There was a lot of stuff going on with it. It was a lot of fun. Hard hitting, heavy hitting. I kind of laid up that story that Suzuki was saying Makabe wasn't good enough to do the job, and he certainly proved it in this particular matchup. But it was one of Makabe's better outings that I've seen him in the last 12 months.
Yes, agreed.
What did you think of this, sir?
Yes, I was going to say it was surprisingly great given Makabe's lack of mobility nowadays, but he does tend to have a few performances like this in him every year, and this was, yeah, he really upped his game to take on Suzuki here. I think it's a shame Sai couldn't make it on this one, really, because I feel like he would have loved this one. This was a proper dad fight, and it was two big lads beating the snot out of each other, and it basically did everything you wanted it to. Lots of brutal Suzuki forearms and slaps, which was lovely. Suzuki, by the way, having a great 2018.
He
so
really
far.
Is yeah, he's some really top notch matches in this, hasn't he, this year, hasn't he?
Yeah, the dude's 49. Like, and he's like having another amazing year. If he carries on like this, he's gonna be one of the best guys, you know, in the rest of the year conversation. And yeah, the only issue really was you never really had any doubt that Suzuki was walking out with the title, which, as I said earlier, was kind of a theme for most of the show, with foregone conclusions. But I think they about managed to, you know, make people believe a little bit maybe that Makabe could pull it off. I think the crowd bought on a couple of things, but it's tough to do that when Makabe, like we say, has only a few big performances in him every year that he's going to win a match like this. Also, shout out to the ref actually trying to enforce the rules for once, seems rare nowadays.
Especially in a Suzuki gun match, yeah.
Yeah, tried to actually grab the chair off Suzuki. We should say as well, I think something that's helped Suzuki in terms of match output is the lack of shenanigans from Suzuki gun. They're not doing run-ins as much and stuff, and they didn't hear. And basically, this is what I want from Minoru Suzuki, having big matches, big violent matches against like the top guys, just one-on-one, because I think that's where he shines, and it's showing really through his performances this year.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't he? He wants to change the story all the time. He doesn't want to be static. I mean, he's like the opposite of Nakanishi, you were talking about earlier. He's had a longer career, he's still at the main event, but he's taken more risks and he's done more things differently than any other thing wrestler there has ever been. Yet he's still a guy who wears black boots and black tights and does a more or less straight up wrestling match. He doesn't really do an awful lot different to what guys were doing 40 years ago. He just, the way he presents it, the way he develops it, the way he changes his angles is just that much different.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's just class. He's just absolute class. And the fact that he can pull off a running drop kick like that at the age of nearly 50 is super impressive.
Yeah, it really, really is. Right then we have our main event of the 46th anniversary show. Kazuchika Okada defeats Will Ospreay in 25 minutes and 25 seconds of a breathtaking non-championship match. This was a return to the tradition of the junior heavyweight champion wrestling the heavyweight champion, the two oldest titles in New Japan Pro Wrestling, put to one side just to have a wrestling match. And this was very, very good. I really enjoyed this. Will Ospreay looked better in this match than he has done in the junior heavyweight division for a long time. This was really well put together, really well laid out. The two clearly like and enjoy one another's company, but also like and enjoy wrestling each other. And it did what it said on the tin. What did you think of this, Alex?
I really enjoyed it. I don't know if I enjoyed it as much as you.
Or Sai.
Well, according to that. Or Sai, yes, Sai loved it as well. Where to start? So, I think the first thing is, like, I mean, first of all, it's a great matchup and a cool idea. And we knew it'd be great. Because of all that, it's easy to forget, I think, that Ospreay is 24-year-old, like, British guy, and he's headlining, like, in Japan against the biggest star over there. I mean, I just feel that needs to be said, like, how well this guy is doing at the age of 24. And it obviously, like he did with Shibata the other year, it was very much this tease of Ospreay at heavyweight, which is obviously where he's going to end up because of the size of him. He even said that's where he wants to be on Jericho's podcast recently, and basically Gedo's having to tell these main junior guys, like, no, we kind of need you to stay here for a bit because we don't have many guys. Which is similar to what happened with Omega until AJ left and he got that opportunity to step up. I think in terms of the match overall, like, I really liked it, but I never believed that Ospreay was going to win. And I felt like Okada was maybe too dominant.
Yeah.
I don't know what you'd make of that, because I think some people were disappointed because it maybe didn't live up to these high expectations everyone had, even though it was really good. Obviously, people were going in thinking this was going to be absolutely insane. But they were probably also holding back a little bit for a match down the line when Ospreay is a heavyweight officially, and probably will be challenging Okada for the belt at that point. I think it was a little bit slower than some of Okada's matches are, especially in the middle, which probably hurt it a bit because people were expecting it to be balls to the wall. And yeah, like I say, it kind of felt like the heavyweight, although there was a couple of really good teasers, like on Near Falls, there was like a power bomb or something like that, and Okada did his great kick out at literally like 2.9 that he does so well. And so there were a couple of moments where I think people bought it, but it just never felt like Okada was ever really in trouble. And it was just like the heavyweight champion showing that the heavyweight division is better than the junior heavyweight division, in a sense. Which obviously, when you compare with what Naito and Tai Chi did, I said I felt like Naito made Tai Chi look better for being in the ring with him, which obviously Okada did, but do you see what I'm getting at?
I see what you're getting at.
I don't want to like crap on the match when it was actually a really good match.
Because to me, that's kind of the way it has to be. He's the heavyweight champion. They're both members of Chaos. This is supposed to be a fun match between friends. So it can't be that serious, because, you know, it would get in the way of Chaos business, and that's not the way they roll. So for me, yeah, I was expecting Okada to win, and that's kind of really what was going to happen. But I got what I wanted from the match. I love the chain wrestling at the start, the British old school world, the sports style wrestling.
Yes.
I liked the Will getting his spots in. I liked the fact he didn't sell as much. He just kind of got on with it a bit more, which is a bit more strong style and really what he should have been doing in New Japan. You know, he sold stuff really well later in the match, a lot better than he could have done. Yeah, I expected the heavyweight champion to be dominant, and I have no problem with that, because otherwise he's, you know, the number one ranked wrestler in the world taking on a guy 30 pounds lighter than he is, who's billed as a junior heavyweight. He has to win, and he has to look pretty good doing it as well, when you're the babyface heavyweight champion.
Yeah, I think that's fair as well. I guess people maybe expected it to be a little more even, but this is kind of the way it often goes. I love the chain wrestling stuff, and it kind of plays into, I think, this larger story of Okada wants to be the best at everything, and he wants to beat everyone at their own game. And there's no doubt in my mind, when he finally loses that title, that is going to be why he loses the title, if you see what I mean. He's basically going to try and do that too much and try and have the perfect match too much, and that's ultimately going to be his undoing. So I think that was smart to keep playing off that. Like you say, Ospreay getting his spots in was great. There were a lot of cool counters down the stretch, with the handspring kick being counted into the tombstone was especially great. And there are a few examples of that. I did really enjoy it. It sounds like I'm quite down on it, but I'm just sort of trying to understand why they went that way, you know, when I think people maybe were hoping that it would be a little more evenly matched, and in the end it was. Apart from those a couple of near falls, it was very like Okada dominated for the majority of the match.
Oh yes, there's also the other point as well, as mentioned in the, was Kevin Kelly mentioned in the previous match, Togi Makabe and Minoru Suzuki couldn't be in the New Japan Cup because they're likely to, who either of them wins, they're going to be champion, and they possibly could face the winner. So you have to keep Okada, Goto, Suzuki, and Jay White away from the tournament to start with, and that's three of your biggest draws, and Jay White, who you're trying to build up. You know, how you put this jigsaw puzzle of a card together. One of the reasons why Ospreay gets the assignment is because there aren't that many heavyweights left that you want to sacrifice to Okada. You have to do something different, and this is an excuse because the expectation is the 46th anniversary show is going to be something a bit different.
Mm. Oh, I love the idea and why they did it. I did enjoy the match. It just, maybe they could have got a bit more out of it, but I think, you know, it definitely made me want to see more of Ospreay at heavyweight, which was, I guess, part of the idea behind it. The question is when he's actually going to be allowed to make that step up, I guess. What do you think? When do you think time will be?
I think probably next year, once he's got rid of the Junior Heavyweight Championship in a blow-off feud in the run-up to Wrestle Kingdom next year, I would think. Yeah, there is the point. He needs to put more weight on, but he's got plenty of room to do that with his frame. He's clearly a New Japan long-haul guy. He's not interested in going to WWE. So they're going to invest in him if he's definitely going to stay put long-term. Him and Okada get on like a house on fire. His mates with Ghetto. Yeah, I can see them investing in him and wanting to put time and money into him. He's got to put some weight in there as well. He needs to grow. But then again, you know, it's kind of one of them things. You look around, like, what's a heavyweight? What's a junior anymore? Kenny wrestled as a junior up until 2 years ago and didn't really do an awful lot to change to go up to heavyweight. Kota Ibushi was the same. But then I look at, like, Pete Dunne and Adam Cole, who were on NXT this week, who are both wrestling as heavyweights, but they're clearly juniors.
Yeah.
You know, especially Adam Cole.
Yeah, the landscape's changed completely in that sense, hasn't it?
Yeah, you know, what is a heavyweight? Like, Travis Banks, who's Progress Heavyweight Champion, is a junior heavyweight, but he wrestles as a heavyweight. Whereas Jimmy Havoc looks like a heavyweight, but he's probably lighter than Travis Banks. Where do we see, like, people in different companies in different countries are, you know, it's a very different kind of makeup as to what you're going to get from these guys. What should be a heavyweight? What's the expectation of a heavyweight? You know, whereas, like, in Japan, because you've got the clear delegation between juniors and heavyweights, you know, it's to do with visual representation as well. You know, even back in the day, in Britain, the reason why you had so many weight divisions was because people like competitive matches. So if you matched up guys who at least looked like they were a similar weight, you could have a competitive match and book it that way. But then there ended up being so many divisions because they were trying to create a sense of like a sporting conceit, much like boxing, where there are loads of divisions. I think I think when boxing first started, there were 3 divisions: lightweight, middleweight, and heavyweight. And now there's 15. So yeah. So you don't want to go down that route. But equally, we had this conversation about, me and Chelsea had this conversation a while back about Kushida will never be a heavyweight because he hasn't got the right frame to make him a heavyweight.
Whereas that's I was going to bring this up with Kushida and Hiromu, especially, who clearly both want to go into the heavyweight division, but are they the right size? It's not like Will is 6'2" or something, isn't he? So
yeah.
It's not a hard sell. Like, he's basically a heavyweight now. He just wrestles a very fast-paced, high-flying style.
Yeah, I mean, there's also like Zack.
So he fits in fine. Yeah,
and also like Zack Sabre Jr. He's clearly a junior heavyweight, but wrestles at heavyweight, and you can sell him as a heavyweight wrestler.
Yeah,
but he's tall and lanky.
It's all in the presentation, exactly. Yeah. And we were speaking, you know, we've just spoken about Tai Chi, who's basically been that big the whole time, but wrestling as junior, and then you've got the case of the Bucks going up to heavyweight. Which I think would be interesting. They're not going to change their style, are they?
Like, no.
All they've done is hit the gym a bit harder and pack on some pounds, which is basically what Kenny did as well. He just packed on more muscle, but he basically wrestles exactly the same way. He probably wrestles even more high flying than he did when he was a junior, even. So it's interesting how the lines between that have got blurred, and how this is part of the issue with what Will was saying on Jericho's podcast, of like, basically all 4 of those guys in that match pretty much want to go up to heavyweight, but the office are basically being like, you're kind of our only 4 main guys in this division at the moment, so you have to stay here, because everyone's sort of going up now.
That would leave Bushi as the only interesting character in the junior heavyweight division if all 4 of them went up. So
yeah, exactly. You know, he's the only other one there, really, though. Obviously you've got Desperado, Kanemuro, you know, guys like that a little
Showing
bit,
but you, I suppose.
They don't wrestle in singles as much. So. No.
I mean, it does work out so as well. I mean, like, Naito was a junior heavyweight tag team champion. He was a junior, you know, in fact, a lot of the guys, not Okada, but Yujiro Takahashi was a junior as well. He was tag partners with Naito. There's quite a few of them who are juniors and have just developed in time. So it's not a bad route to go. But yeah, it's interesting because how long is it going to take them to get to the pinnacle, as it were, you know? And I can see that, but it's like, equally, it's not like back in the day where Jushin Liger's been a junior heavyweight all his life because he's the best junior heavyweight ever. But that isn't necessarily seen as the noble thing it used to be.
Yeah, well, like you've touched on there, it's almost like the junior division is the stepping stone to the heavyweight division in some ways. So the guys will go through that division and then they want to go up, which is fine. But obviously they are going to have to bring in more juniors for that to work if all these guys are going to want to go up to heavyweight.
Yeah. So we'll have to see what happens there. I mean, we've got the New Japan Cup is coming up as well. That's the next thing to happen in the next couple of days. We previewed that last week with Sai and with Chelsea. We've got Supercard of Honor. That's the next thing for Ring of Honor, which has also got booked with New Japan kind of implications for the matches. That'll be Kenny Omega versus Cody Rhodes and Marty Scurll versus Dalton Castle for the Ring of Honor World Championship. Any thoughts there?
That those matches will be very good, I would imagine. I mean, Cody Omega is going to be really interesting. It's obviously been building for a long time. I think Cody's looked a lot better in ring wise. Like I say, his character is, you know, the most defined it's been since he left WWE for me. But his in ring work was leaving a little bit to be desired. We've spoken about that. I feel like, you know, the match he had with Ibushi, for instance, at Wrestle Kingdom was one of the best matches of the night, which is saying a lot when, you know, on the Wrestle Kingdom card. And yeah, he's been looking great in these tags as well recently. So, I mean, and obviously he's wrestling Kenny Omega, who's unbelievable. So I think that's going to be really good. and Marty Skrull and Dalton Castle be really interesting. I'm not convinced they'll switch the title just yet, but
no.
You never know. Like, you just never know with Ring of Honor. And the fact that Marty is, you know, if it's playing into a bigger Bullet Club storyline, if Marty ended up winning that title, that adds some very interesting wrinkles into that again.
Yeah, it does. I'm not sure he's ready for it yet, though. But
I don't think they will. But no. there's always that in the back of your mind, which is good. That they're teasing that the change could happen. So I think that's gonna be a really good card anyway.
Especially as Dalton just beat Jay Lethal, so that kind of implies that, well, he's beaten the big name former champion twice now. So it could be Dalton for a long while, I think, yet. Which is no bad thing, because I think Dalton makes a good heavyweight champion for Ring of Honor.
He does, yes. Are there any plans to bring Dalton over to Japan, do we know?
He was on the Honor Rising tour.
Oh, of course he was. I'm getting mixed up, because that's under under the Ring of Honor name.
Yeah,
I guess I mean in a New Japan ring.
Cody was Ring of Honor champion last summer, and they didn't enter him in the G1 because they thought he'd have to eat too many pins. So I don't think he'd be here for the G1, but it'd be nice to see him there, to be honest.
They do some kind of exhibition stuff, don't they, with that stuff? So
yeah, I don't know.
Just wondering aloud whether he'll get that chance.
It'd be a good opportunity, I feel.
Hmm.
But we are going to have to call it for today. So I'd like to thank my guest at this time, Mr. Alex Watt. Thank you very much, sir, for your time today.
Yes, thank you. We drifted off topic a couple of times. we spoke about some interesting topics there.
Yes, we did. If you'd like to follow Alex, he's AlexWatt187 on Twitter. You can follow me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter, and you can follow the show at Troopany Show on Twitter as well. You can find us on Facebook, The Troopany Show, and on Patreon, The Troopany Show as well, where you can pledge and keep The Troopany Show free forever. If you are listening on iTunes, please give us a review, because it helps the algorithm and means we get, you know, people like us more and find us a bit easier, because we go up the scales in the wrestling podcast. I'm not sure completely how it works, but if you give us a 5-star review, then we'd be very, very happy with you. That would be awesome. So thank you very much for that. Any final words, Alex?
Give us a 6-star review. Obviously.
I don't think they'll let you do that.
That's how we do it in wrestling now.
The Meltzer option.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, then. Thank you very much for listening to us this week. We'll be back soon. Take care and goodbye.